Then he said to them in his teaching, "Beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplaces, best seats in the synagogues, and the best places at the feasts, who devour widows' houses and for pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation." And now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in 2 mites, which make a quadrants. So he called his disciples to himself and said to them, "Assuredly, I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her whole livelihood." So Jesus makes some very clear distinctions between these two different types of people, between the scribes and between this widow. And so we're going to look at the two. We're going to kind of look at what they were like in this time, and we're going to look at how we can learn from them. And the first there is the scribes. And the scribes of Jesus' time, this is the definition of a scribe. They were learned men who would study the law, transcribe it, and write commentary on it. That was their job. On a regular basis, they would study the law. They would look at the Old Testament. They would look at the law of Moses, and they would sit down, they would study that, in-depth study on the law. Then they would write it out so that they could even learn it deeper and even to a point of memorizing the law. And then their job was to interpret the law, to write commentary on the law and what these things actually meant. These would be the Bible scholars of the time, the ones who would write the theology books. And their theology, of course, was based entirely on the law. They were men who would try then also to convince people to honor them in various ways, one of which they would try to take advantage of the widows, as it says, the widows who were so vulnerable. They even to the point, it's been said that they would convince people that a holy thing to do would be to give to the scribes. The widows especially, they would go to and convince them that this is a wise thing to do. This is a holy thing to do, to give money to us, to the scribes. And so they would take advantage of the widows, of the women who were in desperate situations. And they then, it says, loved greetings in the marketplace. They were they would go out to the marketplace and everybody knew them, and they would love to be seen as holy or righteous men. They would love to be seen this way, they would love to be greeted this way, and they would want the attention in that way, that people would pay attention to them and see them as some sort of righteous. They wore long garments. This, again, speaking of their wealth, because they would, as we said, they would get money out of the vulnerable people. They would get money out of the widows, and then from there, that would add to their wealth, and then they would buy these long, wonderful, beautiful garments, and they wanted to be seen in those things. And so all these things, we keep adding it up, Okay, so they knew the law, they studied the law, but yet they didn't get the heart of the law. They were all about the letter of the law, and they would study it so much, and they would get so deep into understanding what the law says and what they think it means, that they were missing out on the heart. The heart which was true righteousness, the heart which was true holiness. That's what the law is there for. The law is not a list of guidelines that we're supposed to follow. That's not just what it's there for. It's so that we could learn to live righteous and holy lives. But we like that legalism. We like the law in front of us to say, this is the do's, this is the don'ts, and I don't have to worry about anything else. Even God gave us a free will. Why? Because he wanted us to make a choice. He wanted us to choose love. He wanted us to choose to love him, to honor him, to have a relationship with him. And so when he sat before Adam and Eve in the garden and he said, just don't eat from that one tree, that was the only law. And it wasn't because he wanted to just give them rules and regulations. It's because he wanted to protect them, but also he wanted to give them a choice. Deuteronomy says we are all given a choice between good and evil, between light and darkness. We're all given that choice. Joshua says, choose this day who you'll serve. As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. So we're all given a choice. We know that God designed that from the beginning. He gave man a choice. And when he did, he just asked man to obey because of love, because of the relationship, so that they could enjoy fellowship. And there was beautiful, sweet fellowship between God and man until the disobedience, until they chose to eat from that tree, until they chose to break that one and only law that was there in front of them. And from there, that created the separation between God and man. So these scribes knew, though, the Old Testament law. They knew the Ten Commandments, of course. They knew the regulations. They knew all the ins and outs. And to the point, the outs were somewhat more important. They studied it so deeply that they found ways that they could really still be abiding by the law, but yet doing things that were not right in the eyes of God. As I said, cheating these widows out of their money, and then, you know, loving the attention in the marketplaces and wearing the long garments, and they wanted the best seats at the feast. The position of where you would sit at the feast meant a lot. You know, the dinner table at home, maybe it doesn't mean so much, you know. Maybe it's random. You sit wherever. Whoever sits there or there, it doesn't make a difference. In my house, it's very important. Caleb sits in his spot. Michael sits in his spot. They all have their spot. And if anybody tries to move around, it's a big fight. It's a big argument. It's not about honor to them, though. It's just about habit. But to the scribes, it was about honor, and they wanted to be at the head of the table, so to speak, in the high places, and to be looked at in a way, wow, look, they're sitting at the head of the table. That's an important person right there. They wanted to be looked at that way. They wanted the best places in the synagogue. They wanted honor. They wanted recognition. They wanted to be seen by people. They wanted to be seen doing holy things and righteous things, and they wanted the recognition for it. And then it even goes to the point of prayer. We established already they would devour the widows' houses. And then it says, for pretense, make long prayers. They didn't even know how to pray. Because what was missing? They were so focused on the letter of the law that they missed the heart of the law. And they missed out on the relationship with God. They were following rules and regulations, and they were finding their outs of that very law, but not the heart of the law, not understanding that it's all about a relationship with God. And we know today the law is completely different because we're under the new covenant, the covenant of the blood of Jesus Christ. And the new covenant, the law that Jesus says, which we just looked at last week. Last Wednesday night, we looked at it. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. This is the new law. This is the new covenant. I learned that from John Boyle over here when I was about 8 years old, actually. I just remembered that. He was my Sunday school teacher a long time ago. And I remember him telling us that. Covenant, it's law. And the new law, the new covenant, is to love the Lord your God. To put the effort into that. Don't put the effort the same into love, into obeying these rules and regulations, but put the effort into the love relationship with God. Put the effort into the love relationships with the people around you. This is all we have, guys. This is all we have. We're not taking anything with us. We have a love relationship with God, and we have a love relationship with people. That's what everything comes down to. And Jesus says it. This sums up the law and the prophets. It sums it up. Well, the law and the prophets is the majority of the Old Testament, isn't it? So that sums it up right there. Done. You want to know the Old Testament? There it is. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that's what the scribes were missing. They were missing love. They didn't understand that there's a God who loves them, and they didn't understand a love for people. As Anthony shared on Sunday morning about the local outreach here, as Pastor Brian and EJ have shared tonight about global outreach in different places that we're connected to, It all comes down to love. If we didn't have love for God, then we would not care about getting water to the people in Haiti. If we didn't have a love for people, we wouldn't care about getting water to the people in Haiti or sending pallets of food to the people in Baton Rouge or connecting with people in our community here and giving out food in a local outreach. We wouldn't care if it was not for love. That's what we're all about. That's what we need to be about. And the scribes were missing that very thing to the point that they didn't know how to pray. Are your prayers hindered? Do you have a hard time praying? I don't know what to say. I don't know how to pray. Do you love? You know, you think about like the romance love, right? The boyfriend, girlfriend, it's like this fresh thing, really exciting. You just get engaged or something like that. You're planning the wedding and everything's super and it's wonderful. And, you know, you can stare into each other's eyes for hours and you could talk all day and all night and all this, right? I remember when I was dating my wife and she was away at Bible college in England and I was here, it was really hard to talk. And actually, she went to England, I went to Montana for 4 months. We went opposite directions and we couldn't talk for 2 months. We didn't say a word, we couldn't, for 2 months, we didn't say anything. I wasn't allowed to in the discipleship program I was in. I come back. The first day I'm back, we talked on the phone for like 4 hours. There was so much to catch up on. And then like the next day, we talked for 2 more hours. And, you know, it's this type of that love, that romance of like, oh, you know, you hang up. No, you hang up. No, I love you. No, I love you. And it's easy, right? Why is it so easy to communicate? Because there's love, right? If we have great love for God, it's very easy to communicate with God. If your prayers are hindered, evaluate your love for God. Evaluate your love for people. Because let me tell you, if you love people, you're going to be praying for them. You're going to have plenty to talk to God about. If we love God, we're not going to have a hard time in that communication with God. And so that's what's missing right here. And Jesus, in this same teaching, in the same chapter, he gives that word to love the Lord your God and to love your neighbor. And now he gives an example of, hey, this is what you need to watch out for. The scribes, don't be like the scribes. Watch out for those guys because they don't know what that love is. They haven't figured out that love, and they're so caught up in the law. They're so caught up in the old covenant, they don't even know how to communicate with God. And they make these, out of pretense, long prayers. They're praying vain repetition, which Jesus himself, again, in Matthew, says, don't pray this way. Don't pray vain repetition. It's useless. It doesn't mean anything. And that's what this is. It's pretense and it's long prayers so that once again they would look righteous and they would put on this self-righteousness and say, look at me. I have long robes. I'm seen in the marketplaces. I'm seen and given honor in the synagogues and at the feasts. Everybody can recognize me as this great and wonderful scribe. And by the way, I pray really nice too. But what does that mean? Nothing without love. 1 Corinthians, you don't have to turn there. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 says it so very well for us. Speaking of love, it says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. And then it goes into the passage that we know very well of love suffers long and is kind, does not envy, does not parade itself, is not puffed up. This, to me, sounds very contrary to the scribes. That it love suffers long, it's kind, it does not parade itself. That's exactly what they were doing, parading themselves around the streets and at the feasts and in the synagogues. You see, though we speak with tongues of men and of angels, though it's beautiful words, and they may come up with beautiful words that they speak, but it's not love, then it's as a clanging cymbal, a sounding brass, a clanging cymbal. These cymbals don't make loud noise, but I wish I could make a loud, obnoxious noise right now. They're quiet cymbals for your purposes. But that's what the reality is that it's obnoxious. It's annoying. We don't want to hear it. If I were to crash a cymbal constantly while I'm trying to speak to you, you guys would be like, this is enough. I'm out of here. I'm not listening to this anymore. It's painful. If we speak, if we even in their prayers, if it was great and wonderful words, but lacking love, it's annoying and it's vain. And that's what they were lacking, was love. These men, these scribes, could be summed up in these two words. Number one, arrogance. They wanted power. They wanted recognition. They were so concerned with appearances. So football season is upon us. And I'm a football fan. But I feel like every season, it gets worse and worse with these touchdown celebrations. And to the point now, it's not even just touchdown celebrations. It's like first down celebrations. And they tackled that guy at some point on the field celebrations. And he might have actually gotten a first down or something. But hey, we got him down to the ground before he got scored. Like, everything's a celebration. And every celebration is getting more and more ridiculous. To the point, I mean, I've seen choreographed, like, full-on dances by half the team in the end zone. It's unbelievable, but this is the idea. It feeds the pride. It's this arrogance and puffing out of the chest, saying, look at me, I am the greatest. At what? And don't get me wrong, you guys know I enjoy sports. I enjoy watching it, but the arrogance is unreal, but you can get the picture. The scribes were these guys. They weren't football players, but they were the righteous according to the law by their own standards that they wrote and they interpreted. So they're walking around with their chest puffed out and saying, look at me, I am righteous, feeding into pride. So that first word we use to describe them would be arrogance. The second would be hypocrisy. They knew the law, but yet they tried to find their interpretations of the law, their ins and outs of the law. They were more concerned about what people thought of them rather than the real condition of their heart. They were more concerned about their appearances. What is hypocrisy? Well, hypocrisy is lacking sincerity. Hypocrisy is basically not the real deal. It's not the real thing. It's fake. In that day, you know, when there was a sculpture or a statue made, if there was any sort of flaw in that, they would use wax to cover up and to make it look like it was that stone again, it was that fine stone. Or they would, you know, if a piece fell off, they would melt wax and they would use wax to put it back on. So the word hypocrisy actually means without wax. That means it's the real deal. It's not a counterfeit. It's not flawed. Or if it is flawed, you can see the flaw. The flaw is not covered up. That's what hypocrisy is. It's covering it up. It's faking it. It's showing, hey, look, it still looks good, even though it's not the real thing. And remember, these men knew the law, but they got caught up in the letter of the law and not the heart, not understanding the heart of the law. And then Jesus evaluates them, and he says this, these will receive greater condemnation. I don't know every person in this room, but let that be a huge warning sign to us all, a huge challenge to us all. Hypocrisy is a mess. And when we're living life like the scribes, we're lacking love, we're living in hypocrisy, we receive a greater judgment, a greater condemnation. And Jesus is making it very clear, don't be like them. You don't want to have anything to do with that. Then we look at the widow, and this widow that comes to give, and she puts in her two mites. This was basically worthless, but that's what she puts in. And many might look at her and say, man, what difference does this make? Does this really matter, this dollar? this penny? Does it make any difference whatsoever? Maybe not to the treasury, but it makes a difference to her. It makes a difference to God in the way that we give. So what do we see in this widow? It's the complete opposite of the scribes. Coming in lowness, coming in humility, meekness, and she sacrifices. And we know, we've seen that the scribes having an appearance of wealth, and they would have the long robes and puffing out their chests and wanting high places. High places would not be given to people who were not wealthy. Recognition would not be given to people who are not wealthy. And so she comes not looking for recognition. She comes in a lowly state, and she gives, and she sacrifices. And why does Jesus say, he calls, I love this all the time. We've been looking through the book of Mark, the gospel here. Jesus always calls the disciples to himself. And so he's sitting there, and he's watching across from the treasury as all these people are giving. And some people, they got a lot of money, they're giving a lot of money. And then, hey, look at me, that's fine, no problem. And they give out of their abundance, and he sees this widow. And when he sees her give, he calls the disciples. He says, guys, come here, come here. I got to tell you something, this is great. This is one of the moments that he looks at them and says, this is a teaching moment. This is a discipleship moment. So guys, come on, gather around. Let me tell you about this widow. And they're like, the widow? What happened? Well, do you see that she gave those two mites? She gave more than everybody else. Now, at this moment, they probably started to question his math skills. Like, we've been following this guy, and he can't add. He said she gave more, but that makes no sense to me. But he goes right into his explanation of it, and he says, why does she give more? Because for they all gave out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had. All that she had was those two mites, and she gave all of it. That shows us the sacrifice. She gave everything. And most likely, she only had those two mites because the scribes cheated her out of the rest. And so now here she comes, giving that, giving it all. We see multiple times throughout the Gospels that Jesus recognizing people who gave it all, who sacrificed. The anointing of Jesus' feet by Mary and Bethany, when she poured out this flask of this fine oil out over the feet of Jesus, that was everything she had. That was the greatest value that she had. And that was worth a lot of money. But he looked at her the same way he looks at this widow. Even though that was a very costly oil, worth so much money, a year's wages is what that was worth. And she broke it and poured it out over the feet of Jesus and worshiped him and anointed his feet. And now here's this woman with only two mites, which is completely worthless, not even a fraction of a day's wage. And Jesus looks at her the same way that, you know what? It's sacrifice. That's what it's about. And what does sacrifice point us to? It points us to love. Because you don't sacrifice if you have not love. Parents in the room, you can all agree that you've made a lot of sacrifices for your children. Why? Because you love them. Because you love them unconditionally. And they might drive you crazy half the time. But you love them so much, and so you continue to sacrifice for them. There doesn't come a day, they're like four, and you're like, you know what? I haven't slept for 4 years. It's enough sacrifice for me. I got no money in the bank. There's no food in the house. There's no clean clothes in the house. You know, you make messes everywhere. I'm not cleaning up after you anymore. I'm done, okay? Have fun. Enough is enough. No, you continue. Every single day, you wake up in the middle of the night, or you, or whatever time it is in the morning, somebody's jumping on you and crawling on you, and they are, you know, a dirty diaper or worse, dirty wall. These are the things that you do for your kids. And then it goes on, and you know, you go through middle school, high school, college, and you sacrifice. You sacrifice your money and your time and your tears and your sleep and all these things. Why? Because you have unconditional love. And why do we see the sacrifice here? Because of unconditional love. And lastly, we see in her sincerity, which is the opposite of hypocrisy. She was the real deal. She didn't try to hide her two mites that she dropped in. She didn't sneak in there and be like, well, let me just, you know what? Let me just sneak it in with somebody else's. Let me put on a nice garment and let me go and pretend like I'm putting a lot in and it looks better. We know what happens when people lie about what they put in, right? The book of Acts, Ananias and Sapphira. They said, yeah, we gave a lot. We gave it all. We sacrificed everything. And Peter's like, you lied, and they dropped dead. Don't lie to the Holy Spirit. So this woman didn't misrepresent herself. She came in sincerity, and she gave what she had. Her heart was about giving, unlike the scribes, unlike the others even before who were giving out of their abundance. Her heart was to give what she could give, everything that she could. And Jesus recognizes that. And Jesus, we saw, evaluated the scribes and says, don't be like these guys. And then he draws attention to this woman and says, look at her. She gave everything. And so we learn from this that it's not about the outward appearance, but it is about the heart. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 7 says, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. This, of course, was when God was speaking to Samuel about David, about anointing a king, and Samuel went through all of David's brothers thinking, like, this is the guy, he's a warrior. Oh, no, maybe this guy. No, not that one, not that one. And then there's David, this little shepherd boy, the runt of the litter. And God says, man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. God knew the heart of David, that David would be a man after God's own heart. God looks at our heart and he knows our motive. Our motive needs to be love. Our love for God, our love for Jesus, and our love for others. If we have selfish motives, it will be found out. If we have selfish motives, we need to evaluate our heart and look at ourselves as these scribes who were about the outward appearance, who were about the recognition, about their own selfish motives, but yet this woman gave sacrificially. And we can learn and be challenged by that today, that we need to let love be our motivation. You know, as EJ was just sharing before about the work down in Baton Rouge, when these type of things happen, disasters, there's all sorts of relief teams and efforts that show up. And many times it's about the humanitarian effort. And it's about checking it off a box and say, oh yeah, we're gonna help that person. And many times, unfortunately, it's for selfish gain. It's the motive of recognition. But the motive needs to be love. And it starts with our love for God, because if we love God, then we will want to help people. And if we love people, we'll want to help them, of course. Love is the motive for everything that we do. And it's the love of Jesus that made a way for us to do anything at all.